Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. I hope everybody's having a great day. And so we've got a lot to get to. A lot of things in the news, some interesting things. Anybody that's read the tease, it's a little bit interesting. It's a little strange. And, you know, Hollywood is Hollywood. So let's get right to it, because I think that, you know, this is one of those things that you say, really? So, okay, our first story of the day involves an actor that basically he is an icon. I think he's one of the best actors, not only of this generation, but of all time. And I'm talking about Al Pacino. Al Pacino is just amazing. And he's one of those actors now that I want to say he's in his 70s, okay? Late 60s, early 70s. Incredible actor. But when you listen to him and what he says sometimes, it's interesting. So there's two stories about him. I'm going to do the first one, the latter, the easier of the two first. I'd like to get people's opinion on this in the comment section. So basically, this comes from the Hollywood Reporter, and he said Al Pacino thinks the first Godfather is, quote, more entertaining than part two. And he says it's really storytelling at its best. So let's dive right into this and see what everybody's thoughts are about this. Al Pacino sat down for a wide-ranging conversation Wednesday night in New York, touching on everything from his early days on The Godfather and his decision to turn down Star Wars and his views on retirement. I'll get to that story in a couple minutes. The 82-year-old actor sat down with David Rubenson, part of the 92nd Street New York's People Who Inspire Us series, for an hour-long chat where he looked back on his career and revealed he is currently writing a memoir. You get to that age, you start to do things like that. I stayed away from it. But I think I've got to start talking about certain things, Pacino said. It's fine. I have kids and all. It'd be a good idea, and I'm working on it, noting his co-author was in the audience. Starting with his big break in The Godfather, Pacino was first asked the crowd who had seen recent Paramount series The Offer. So anybody who's not familiar with The Offer is on Paramount Plus. It's about, it's a mobster type of series, which follows the behind the scenes of the 1972 film. I watched it, and about half of it was true. Really, that's a shock, the actor said. He recalls starting to work on The Godfather and after the first day of shooting, Diane Keaton and I got drunk and thought, this is it, our careers are over, this is a mess. The film obviously ended up being far from a mess, going on to receive 11 Oscar nominations. Rubenson and Pacino asked if he was upset that Marlon Brando was nominated, and of course he won for it. Best actor, while Pacino was recognized as supporting actor, though Pacino had more lines in the film. How does a story like that get out? I was upset. I wasn't upset. Are you kidding me? Pacino said, explaining that he didn't go to the ceremony that year because, quote, because of that. Let's clear the air on that one. I've been hearing about that up the grapevine, end quote. Rubenson also asked Pacino if he thought The Godfather 2 was superior than The Godfather. That's a conversation you can have all day long. To which the star replied, no, I don't. I really think it's more what you would call it, artistic or something. I don't know. I don't mean to play it down or be overly modest, because I starred him with Bob De Niro, but at the same time, it's a different film, and he's right about that. You see, The Godfather is more entertaining. Godfather 2, is this just a study for Francis? Pacino said. Godfather 1, I saw it recently. It's always got two or three things that are going on in the scene. You're always in the story. You're going. You don't know what's going to happen next. It's storytelling. It's really storytelling at its best. Godfather 2 is sort of laziness, and it's kind of the different somber moves slowly. But it's a great movie, I have to say. By the way, AFI agrees because that's one of their top 100 films of all time. He also reflected on his later roles in Serpico, Dog Day Afternoon, and Scarface. When asked if there were any he regretted passing on, he noted, "I turned down Star Wars when he was new in the scene and being offered anything and everything to play. So I was there, and all of a sudden, they gave me a script that was called Star Wars. I said, I got the script. They offered me so much money, but I don't understand. Eventually deciding he couldn't do it for the reason he joked, I gave Harrison Ford a career, which he's never had to thank me for. After nearly 50 films, Pacino says he currently has 4 more on the schedule and hopes to do an adaptation of King Lear next year. That would be interesting. When Rubinson asked about retirement, the actor joked, I'm always retired. I was retired when I was 25. I mean, who cares? Please just don't call it retired. I don't want to work anymore. I don't know. Sometimes I just don't want to do it as much. I like the lead up to it. You know what I mean? It's sort of like foreplay or something. I'd like to get there and we'll see. Will I make it? Will I not make it? That kind of thing. I don't know anymore, he continued, putting his hands on his knees. I wake up in the morning. I sit at the edge of the bed like this. And I think, is it really possible that I'm going to make it through this day? And then I think, but did I say that yesterday? And did I say that the day before and the day before that? And I got through it. I said it this morning, ladies and gentlemen, and you're seeing him today. So basically, I mean, it's one of those things where Pacino is, he can say anything and have a boatload of fun. I love Al Pacino. For me, I mean, look, if you go through his history and what he's done, he's remarkable. One of the greatest performances in my eyes is not only The Godfather, is not only Scarface, but Heat. All Day Long and Twice on Sunday. I think that's Michael Mann's masterclass, and he just does a fantastic, fantastic job of it. And that's why I did it for the Perfect Movie series, which, by the way, you can go back and watch. We did that for March. But yeah, the fact that he turned down Star Wars, though, is pretty funny, because it's like, can you imagine Al Pacino as Han Solo? A young Al Pacino. I don't think so. It would have been interesting, though. It's one of those what-ifs questions. I think it would have been very, very interesting. I love him, though. The Godfather, for me, is it's one of the top 5 films. It really defined what a monster movie is at the end of the day. It just turned 50 last year. It really defined what a mob movie is. If you look at any mob movie over the past 35 years, whether it's Goodfellas, whether it's The Departed, whether it's, I don't know, yeah, the Untouchables by De Palma, anything, really, it's all predicated on The Godfather. Because it's more of a saga. It's more of an epic. And I think that's when you see that, you go, wow. So, and there were rumors, so it says he has 4 projects in coming up. There's rumors, and I don't know this to be true or false. There's rumors that he is going to star in Michael Mann's Heat 2 when that comes out. That would be interesting. So anybody who has read Heat 2, and I've got the book, I'm still trying to get through it. But they all know, if you've seen Heat, you know what I'm talking about. It's interesting. I think that, I don't know if you'd be around for it, though, to be absolutely honest. I mean, they probably couldn't start filming until 2026, 2027. And he'd be like 88, so, or 86. Let's hope he hangs on that long. But yeah, I mean, those two, for me, Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, are the perennial best actors. I mean, have won multiple Academy Awards, have been in multiple films that are just iconic. So, Yeah. So I think the fact that he passed on Star Wars is fascinating. We're going to get to that story in just a minute. But so I guess the question is for you guys, which is a better movie? Is it The Godfather or is it The Godfather 2? Which one do you prefer and why? Leave your thoughts down in the comments and I'm going to get back to everybody. Okay. So let's move on. As I was just talking about, Al Pacino, and even in that piece, talked about not playing Han Solo. And that's a fascinating thought, because can you imagine Han Solo with Al Pacino playing it? It's one of those what ifs, right? So this comes from Variety. And once again, this is almost the same article I just read. I'm going to go through most of it, though, because I want to hear what you guys have to say about this. So Al Pacino passed on a trip, passing to take a trip to a galaxy far, far away. During a talk on Wednesday at the 92nd Y in New York, which we established, the Oscar winner recalled being offered the role for Han Solo in Star Wars. "Well, I turned down Star Wars. When I first came up, I was the new kid on the block. You know, what happens when you become famous? It's like, give it to Al. They give me Queen Elizabeth to play," Pacino said. "They gave me a script called Star Wars. They offered me so much money, I don't understand it. I read it, so I said I couldn't do it. I gave it Harrison Ford a career." Of course, he was kidding about. Pacino also recently said that he watched The Godfather. Pacino said he rewatched The Godfather after not seeing it for 25 years. While shooting the mafia classic, Pacino and Francis Ford Coppola asked to meet him one night after filming at a restaurant where the director was having dinner with his family. "I came in and he said, you know, I had a lot of faith in you and your family," Pacino said. "I'm standing there thinking, what the fuck do I do now?" "Go to Paramount," Coppola told him. After watching his footage, Pacino understood the problem. In the film's early scenes, the studio hadn't realized his internal journey into Michael Corleone. "I wanted to come out of nowhere, and by the end of the film, create some sort of enigma," he said. "His transition is what interests me, and I thought I wasn't able to save it. After the first day of shooting, Diane Keaton and I got drunk. We thought, well, this is it. Our careers are over." What kept him in the film? The Salazzo scene, where Michael shoots a cop. Coppola pushed that up because he thought Paramount was about ready to fire me, Pacino said. "I do the scene, they liked it, and they kept me in because I shot someone." That story, Pacino revealed, will open his upcoming memoir, which he reportedly sold to Penguin Press last year. He also said that not only half of the offer, the Paramount series about the making of The Godfather, was true. On Scarface, his most gratifying film, he said, Pacino recalled one of his many injuries. "You can't imagine what it's like to be there," he said, "in one of the heavily armored chutes. The smoke, every day you have to put yourself into a trance. One day we're shooting, fighting. Say hello to my little friend. I shoot 30 rounds, I get hit, the gun goes down, and I'm supposed to be wounded. I go to pick up the guns and my hands on the barrel. My hand stuck to it, and I had to go to the hospital. I was out for 2 weeks, covered in fake blood in the emergency room. The nurse mistook him for some sort of scumbag. I was gone," he described, "but they shot the shit out of me. They shot so much while I was away. Spielberg came down and had a crack at shooting someone. Everyone wanted to do it. On Heat, one of my absolute favorite films, by the way." He offered some candid advice to the Pacino fans. "Here's the thing with Heat. I hope you see it again, audience. I was playing this cop and I found a way in. But this is a detective who is kind of wild. I thought, he's probably chipped cocaine. That will explain to you some of my, He laughed and said, "That will explain there was no cocaine sniffing in the film, but I definitely was." All in all, Pacino said some of his best acting came from Lee Strasberg, the legendary founder of the acting studio. "Do you know what he called out acting talent?" Pacino asked the audience. He said, "Talent is like a cement block that you walk on on the sidewalk, and there's a green blade of grass peeking up through the cracks. Ever see that? That's talent. What's next? Pacino said he will soon turn his focus to King Lear, which I made mention of earlier. While the Michael Redford directed adaptation was originally announced in 2018, Pacino said that he and writer Bernard Rose are, quote, coming to a place where we have a script, end quote, and will likely start to shoot next year. So let's talk about this. I think the fact that, so Metal, you've never seen The Godfather? Really? Wow. Well, you're in for a treat. You are in for an absolute treat. I wish I could say that. Okay. Here's my homework to you, Metal. You need to, it's quite a long movie, so you're going to have to carve some time out, but you need to sit down, any of them. Okay, so here's my advice to you. Okay, you need to carve out 3 hours. You don't have to do it all in one day, but you need to carve out like 3 hours. And you need to sit down and just watch The Godfather and let it go. The first time you see it, you're going to be like, whoa. Let it just absorb over you. Then go watch The Godfather Part 2, okay? And then you can eventually go on. So The Godfather Part 3 is like this, the redheaded stepchild of the trilogy, but it's still not bad. It's been years since I've seen it. Then go watch that one. But seriously, it's one of the top 5, top 7 films ever made. And I mean, I'm talking like Casablanca, Citizen Kane, Gone with the Wind. You need to sit down and, because it's an incredible movie. There is one scene, and you'll know it when you see it. It's just unbelievable. But yeah, so, okay. Yeah, definitely. I want you to come back and let me know, you know, what. And by the way, try to do it all in one sitting. I know it's going to be slow, and it may seem slow, but there are moments when it picks up, I promise. But yeah, no, that's... Wow. Congratulations. So actually, that movie was just, it just turned 50 last year. So you're not missing that. So you've got a lot of time to see it. But Al Pacino is, I couldn't imagine Al Pacino playing Han Solo. I just couldn't for anything, because of the fact that he has so much charisma. I mean, it's one of those things where I would have loved to have seen, but, and we'll get to it, but I think it's definitely a thing that I don't know if I could see now. Who knows? It would have been fascinating, but I'll say this much. When you hear about the stories about Star Wars, like Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford actually had a relationship during Empire. Okay. I wonder if that, because you could tell their chemistry was just top notch. I wonder if that would have been, you know, I mean, he still talks about Carrie very, very fondly today. So it's just fascinating to see. Anyways, guys, what do you think? Do you think you could have seen Al Pacino playing Han Solo? Never tell me the odds. You know, do you think he could have pulled that off? Anyways, leave your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so we move quickly from a movie star to streaming. And it's one of those things where one thing about streaming is this. Streamers outsource their products to other streamers, and there are third-party rights. So when there are third-party rights, what ends up happening is that they have to pay an exorbitant fee, whether it's Friends or whether it's, you know, South Park or whatever it is, and to have it put on the streamer. So here's the problem. South Park is a phenomenal movie, or not phenomenal show, excuse me. I've watched South Park since I remember the early days when Trey Parker and Matt Stone used to make it, these guys out of cardboard. They used to cut a cardboard and do that, and that's how they used to animate it. Anyways, now we have a legal battle between Warner Brothers and Paramount. Okay? So Paramount Global strikes back at Warner Brothers Discovery in a $50 million countersuit over streaming rights. So here it goes like this. And by the way, this is from Deadline. They haven't quite killed Kenny, but Paramount Global took a hard swipe at Warner Brothers Discovery over South Park. In a bold jab back at the David Zaslav-run company, $200 million lawsuit over streaming rights to the long-running cartoon satire created by Trey Parker and Matt Stone. The Sherry Redstone-run conglomerate just filed a $50 million-plus lawsuit, countersuit in New York, and they left nothing in the corner. Through this counterclaim, South Park Studios seeks to recover all of the unpaid licensing fees, totally more than $52 million, based upon WarnerMedia's blatant breaches of the term sheet. The response and counterclaim documents says, in addition, based on WarnerMedia's material breach of contracts and its indications that will continue to withhold the $225 million licensing fee, still owed for the rest of the five-year term. South Park Studios is entitled to a declarative judgment confirming the party's rights and obligations under the term sheet. The dense 59-page filing adds, now I'm not going to, obviously, so you can go to Deadline yourself and you can actually download that and read the whole thing if you like. Further, WarnerMedia has given clear indications that it will not pay any of the remaining $225 million in licensing fees still owed for the rest of the five-year term under the term sheet, the document goes on to say. Paramount Global certainly has not agreed WarnerMedia can continue to disregard its contractual obligations in this manner. And as funny as South Park can be, corporate dust-ups can appear. This clearly is no laughing matter, especially for Warner Brothers. WBD prepares to launch its revamped Max streaming service next month. They are just an absolute mess right now. And I'll get to that in a minute. Warner Brothers Discovery has indefensively refused to pay more than $50 million it owed for South Park content that it's undisputably received and which HBO Max continues to air and exploit. A Paramount Global spokesman tells Deadline on Wednesday after the counterclaim that rudimentary mentioned to dismiss the New York Supreme Court docket. Warner Brothers Discovery's argument that Paramount's Global was required to deliver additional South Park content is baseless and wholly unsupported by the party's agreement, the exec dad. Furthermore, it certainly does not justify WBD's refusal to pay for immensely valuable content, of all of which has been received and which it will continue to profit. An HBO Max spokesperson told Deadline late Wednesday, "We believe that Paramount and South Park Digital Studios embarked on a multi-year scheme of unfair trade practices and deceptions, flagrantly and repeatedly breaching our contract, which clearly gives HBO Max exclusive streaming rights to the existing library and new content for the popular animated comedy South Park, aka See You in Court. In the meantime, let's talk some recent history. In 2019, the then AT&T-owned WarnerMedia jacked up its streaming inventory with a hard-fought $500 million deal to snag the 23-season past run of South Park, plus several new seasons. That agreement for around 300 episodes, which was delivered almost immediately, was paid installments of about $25 million a quarter, which was up until earlier this year. Throwing around accusations like illicit conspiracy and verbal trickery on the part of the Comedy Central parent company, WBD asserted that in the 2021 Paramount Global, Parker and Stone's South Park Digital Studios and MTV Studios drilled a big hole into the Big Bucks 2019 agreement that would permit the Bob Vasquez-led gang to keep the lid in the linear and streaming rights for the new seasons of South Park and around 14, quote, original movies, end quote, based on the series. the $900 million fuck you money deal that Viacom CBS struck with Parker and Stone 2 years ago put a lot more Cartman in the pipeline and a lot more South Park coming down for the next for the burgering Paramount streamer. Now, nothing in the 2019 agreement specifies how many episodes each future South Park season could be or could not be. Well-informed sources tell us. However, at this point, you have to believe South Park is on two separate streaming platforms, both trying to gain a solid foothold in a very crowded market, and both looking at trying to squeeze more premium content out of tighter budgets. So, whatever it is or is not, is in that much celebrated deal of a four years ago, we expect to see a lot of lawyers to make hay and a lot of money. And that could be great for an episode of South Park on one streamer or another. Okay, let's talk about this because this is something that's important. This is, so when we talk about streamers, okay, and the programming on those streamers, okay, the fact is that if I have a show, okay, and I want to sell it to, let's say, Metal, okay, and what will end up happening is I own the show, okay, and what ends up happening is that Metal says, okay, I want your show. I'm going to pay you $300 million for the show. Okay. Okay, cool. So what it ends up happening is, let's say it's over, I don't know, 10 years. So he pays me $300 million to have his show, okay, my show run on his streaming service for 10 years. And then what ends up happening is that every single new show that I come out with of, I don't know, Dave's Donuts, okay, what ends up happening is after a certain period of time, it will go on Metal Streamer. So let's say it's 30 days. So after 30 days, every single, and I run weekly, okay? So that comes and I run weekly. After 30 days, that show gets put on his streaming service. Now, he gets this for 10 years, every single show that happens. Now, if I stop the show, okay, what ends up happening is that the contract is then broken, okay? And what they're claiming here is that the simple fact is that WB is not paying for the rights of this show, and they're making a profit. Now, I want to go back to a quote here because this is, I mean, obviously it's very salacious, okay, some of these quotes. But I want to go back to a quote here because this is interesting, okay? And it talks about illicit conspiracy and verbal trickery, okay? Now, obviously, it's not in writing, so verbal is, you know, obviously talked about. But it's one of those things where, you know, they are in a lot of trouble, okay? So this is what an HBO Max members told Deadline. We believe that it's on a multi-year scheme of untrade fair practices and deception, flagrantly and repeatedly breaching our contract, which gave HBO Max exclusive streaming rights to the existing library and new content for the popular animated show South Park. Think about that. Unfair trade practices and deception. Now, the thing is that that's exactly what they're being accused of. That's exactly what they're being accused of with the DOJ investigation, unfair practices. And so what they're saying is, we're not going to pay you for the rights for this. I can't even imagine, and this is going to get really, really dirty really fast. Don't be shocked in the next, I don't know, week or two if you see South Park completely removed from Max. Or, okay, so HBO Max is going to launch in a little less than a month. Don't be surprised if it's not on the channel. Okay, so it's one of those things where, and this is a multi-billion-dollar thing, okay? And they're very stringent on what they can and can't do. So, look, I mean, this is why, you know, streaming rights are, you know, extremely important, because if you don't have, if you use something and you don't have the rights to do it, you get sued, or if you don't pay the contract. And that's exactly what's going on here. So this is going to be a battle for, you know, upwards of 50, 60, maybe even $220 million. Okay. Probably of what they haven't paid. So, and if they profit from it, they're going to say, you can't use these profits to continue doing this. So I love South Park. I hope it continues. You know, I mean, who knows? They may just shut the show down completely, and then they'll figure it out until they can get something up. But the way South Park works is when something happens, whatever it is, they are the first ones to take hold of this. What do you guys think? Do you guys watch South Park? Do you like the earlier seasons? Do you like the later seasons? Who's your favorite character on South Park? Where do you watch it? Is it HBO Max? Is it Paramount Plus? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so we move on from streaming to actors. We're back to actors. And over the past couple of days, I have talked about a couple of actors that have regretted not taking roles. So a couple of days ago was Nicholas Holt. He actually screen tested for the Batman. He didn't get it. He screen tested for Top Gun Maverick. He didn't get it. Tom Cruise says, hey, come be a part of Mission Impossible 7. He was all for it. And then he had contractual agreements to his show. Subsequently, he couldn't do it. I'm sure he's going to be on Tom. He's in Tom Cruise's speed dial, though, because he liked his work. Yesterday, we talked about Rachel McAdams. Now, she was in movies at like Red Eye and Spotlight, phenomenal career. And then she turned down things like Iron Man, Mission Impossible 3, and a couple others. And it's like, whoa. But she needed to take a break from her career. Today, we have another story. And it's just amazing how these all come out at the same time. So 3 in 3 days. So this one is about Johnny Depp and Mark Wahlberg. So they actually had a shot, if you can imagine this, to be in the Ocean series. That's right. I'm talking to Steven Soderbergh, Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, and Ocean's 13. They had a shot to be in that, and they did not take the roles. Now, personally, I've not seen Ocean's 12, but I love Ocean's 13, and I love Ocean's 11. That all being said, let's go to the, I want to read you this because it's fascinating. George Clooney says Mark Wahlberg, Johnny Depp turned down Ocean's 11, and they regret it now. The actor also regrets doing Batman. The star-studded Ocean's 11 cast could have looked a little bit different. George Clooney recently confirmed reports that both Mark Wahlberg and Johnny Depp were approached to play Linus in the first installment of Steven Soderbergh's now iconic franchise. The role eventually went to Matt Damon. The film's A-list cast also included, of course, Brad Pitt, Julia Roberts, Andy Garcia, and John Cheadle, amongst others. With producer Jerry Weinstrom and a great script to help them assemble their team. Nonetheless, they ran into some roadblocks. Steven had just done Aaron Brockovich in Traffic, and he was nominated for both films, Clooney said during an Ocean's 11 panel on the 2023 TCM Film Festival. So people really wanted to work with Steven. That said, some people did say no to us, Soderbergh chimed in. They did, Clooney replied. Some famous people told us to go fuck off. Mark Wahlberg and Johnny Depp. There were others. They regret it now. I regret fucking doing Batman. While multiple actors turned down the role in the films, getting Roberts to sign on at the time was a major get for the project. Clooney recalls how he convinced the actress to star alongside him in the Ocean's franchise. We sent Julia a script, and I wrote a note on it. So I hear you got 20 million. He remembered. and we sent her a $20 bill. It made her laugh, and yes, she jumped right on board. The film's success led to two sequels, Ocean's 12 in 2004 and Ocean's 13 in 2007, with the original cast, as well as the female spinoff, Ocean's 8, in 2018, which stars Sandra Bullock, Cate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway, Rihanna, Helena Bonham Carter, Mindy Kaling, Sailor Paulson, and Awkwafina. By the way, I walked out of that movie. That is only one of three movies ever that I've walked out of. Ever. Chariots of Fire was in 1981, which I was too young. I was six at the time. And Greystone, The Legend of Tarzan. I think it was in 83. So those are I can tell you firsthand, but that movie was horrible. Okay, last paragraph here. A prequel is an actor development of Warner Brothers from Jay Roach, with Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling to star. Plot details are being kept under wraps, but it's also known as an original Ocean's 11 story that is set in 1960s Europe. Okay, let's talk about this real quick, because there is something to be said about this. Look, the fact is that, first of all, the reason why I walked out of it is because there was no story. I mean, had they put in a cameo here or there, you know, so Sandra Bullock was supposed to be playing Danny Ocean's sister, right? Well, there was no, I mean, you could have had a flashback with George Clooney, a couple of others, nothing. Matt Damon there was no cameo by Matt Damon. There was no cameo by Brad Pitt. I just couldn't get into it. I left. Anyways, the fact that they're actually making a prequel with Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling. So what they're doing is they are, they're banking on, okay? They are banking on Barbie doing really well. It's what they're doing. They're banking on Barbie doing really, really well. Because guess what? Barbie is starring Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling. Surprise! So I think here's the thing. And I hope it does well. I'm not dismissing that. I just think that if it underperforms, I wouldn't be shocked to see that scrapped. And frankly, here's the thing. I don't care about it anymore. I love the Oceans franchise. I don't care anymore. Okay? Hell, you know, why don't you... this is what I mean. They need to be coming up with something new and something inventive. Don't do prequels of IPs. You know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, how he became a thief, you know, pulling off his first job. I have a serious issue with it. And they've already got the stars. They've already got the stars in there. You know, I mean, I'm all for saying one thing. I have to see the story. Right? Because look, or a trailer, but if you're telling me that, here's my question. What if Barbie fails? By their measures. What if Barbie fails? What if Barbie fails and then they're left holding the cards? Well, what are they going to scrap it? I don't know. I'm tired of reboots. I'm tired of everything like that, but, you know, we'll see. But to know that those two guys weren't in there, interesting. It's an interesting thought. Now, he says he regrets doing Batman. I think it might have been the nipples. I kid when I say that, but I mean, it was just, you know, 20 years later, you go, okay. But you got to remember, it was a paycheck at that time. I mean, he was still a heartthrob on ER and everything else. So anyways, what do you guys think? Do you think you could have seen either Johnny Depp or Mark Wahlberg play Linus in Ocean's 11? What do you think about this prequel reboot? Is that something you'll see? Is it something you're interested in seeing? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so two more stories left. And this is a big story. And I think arguably the second biggest story, and we'll get to the biggest story after that. But it's a big deal for everybody that's a comic book fan. Because Spider-Man is now finally coming to Disney Plus. Every single Spider-Man, almost every single Spider-Man, is coming to Disney Plus. So all of the ones except No Way Home and, everything except No Way Home and a couple others. So this comes from our friend Scott Mendelson. Spider-Man and Venom are swinging onto Disney Plus. It's not quite every single Spider-Man movie on Disney Plus, but it's a start. Beginning Friday, the entire Sam Raimi-directed Spider-Man trilogy, which is Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, and Spider-Man 3, will arrive alongside Mark Webb's first Amazing Spider-Man reboot. On March 12th, subscribers will be able to watch the first Venom film and the first Marvel-Sony Peter Parker passion play, Spider-Man Homecoming. However, that still leaves ten live-action titles, at least going back to 2002 MIA on the platform. The Amazing Spider-Man 2 and Venom Let There Be Carnage are left out alongside the two MCU Spider-Man sequels, Far From Home and No Way Home. This is just how the license agreements and related streaming merry-go-round work. All four of the missing titles are starring currently on Stars. For that matter, every single Spider-Man or Venom movie is currently available to rent for around $4 on every mainstream VOD platform. While the Tobey Maguire, Kirsten Dunst, Jane Franco iteration will at least arrive on Disney Plus as a complete standalone entity, we'll see how much interest viewers have in the first chapters of the next two variations or the next two installments. Will audiences be thrilled to check out Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone's The Amazing Spider-Man on a Disney Plus, knowing that they'll have to sign up for Stars to pay $4 to rent The Amazing Spider-Man 2? Considering how much audiences don't seem to pay attention to what's streaming where, will they watch Spider-Man Homecoming and become angry and outraged only then to discover that the next two Tom Holland Zendaya flicks are only available elsewhere? At least Morbius fans is currently hiding under Netflix, save from an accidental discovery. I love Scott's writing. Considering the relative lack of buzziness, new content on Disney Plus, save for periodic Star Wars and MCU film shows, this qualifies as a get. To be fair, next month we'll pick up via a National Geographic-produced Anne Frank miniseries, A Small Light, a miniseries adaptation of Gene Yang's American Born Cheats in The Muppets Mayhem. So let's talk about this real quick. I love the first couple of Spider-Mans. And so Metal says, it's about damn time. Yeah, it is about damn time. So the way it works is, and what Scott was talking about in the piece is, this is how streaming works. There is so much. So when a feature film goes to, it's out for you guys to see, okay? Then after it's done with its what's known as the theatrical run, okay? It was 90 days, now it's 45 days. Then it goes, so somebody like Sony then goes to a pay-per channel like a Stars or Showtime or whatever else, and then says, okay, how much you want to pay for this? They say, okay, X amount. So they pay X amount to Sony, okay, and maybe they split that with Disney, okay, in the case of Homecoming, and then they'll get to see it. So now if you have Stars, you can watch Homecoming or you can watch No Way Home and Far From Home on Stars. That being said, once it's done with that particular timetable, then it can move over to streaming. So then, you know, that is done. Now, clearly this, as Scott said in the piece, this is all about how streaming works, okay? And what the rights are. So it must have taken quite a bit of time to do this. Now, that being said, Disney has their own platform. Sony does not. So keep that in mind, too. So Sony sold Morbius to they sold Morbius to Netflix, which, you know, as a kid, it was buried. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens with this. I suspect that these people that have showed Disney Plus might have, a lot of them might have stars, so they'll be able to watch them. If not, they probably will. You might see an uptick in, they don't have it. So it will be interesting to see. This is definitely good for Disney Plus, though. And it's one of those things where they need to get some bigger stuff on the on their platform, because right now, Mandalorian just went south. And I have not watched the finale, but everybody that has told me about it is just, it's not good. So this comes from Metal. What do you think the deal is with No Way Home? Why not that one? Is it because all the Spider-Men are in it and the money is... Is it because the Spider-Men are in them in the most money? Okay, so why is No Way Home? To your point. So No Way Home only came out a couple years ago. Okay? So it's not that it's... it's still one of those movies that it's really, really fresh. Right? Really fresh. So once it comes out of theaters, Sony then will then go to, let's say, Stars, because that's where it's streaming, or that's where it is, okay? So if they'll go to Stars, so let's say you pay $15.99 a month for Stars, okay? They'll go to Stars and say, okay, you can have this exclusive movie that we did. I'll put it to you this way, Metal. Now, if I don't know if you have TNT, okay? But if you do, you'll notice that TNT and TBS have all of the Star Wars movies, right? So what they did, okay, is they paid Lucasfilm or Disney, considering how they own them, about $1 billion. Now, you have to remember, this is when The Force Awakens was out, okay, in 2015, I think, 2016. And they paid Lucasfilm $1 billion, okay? And they said, here's the thing. We get access to your whole Star Wars library. That is The Force Awakens. That is A New Hope. That is Empire Strikes Back. That is Return of the Jedi. That is Solo. Okay? Or any other upcoming movies you may do. So when they bought that, okay, they ended up getting The Last Jedi. Very first one. That was a world premiere on TNT, okay, with limited commercials. They got Solo, okay, and they got The Rise of Skywalker. So it was the first thing right off the top. So when they bought that, they can air it now as much as they want. And that's what you'll see is on weekends, okay, you'll see them do a Star Wars marathon for like 9 hours. You know, they'll do episodes 4, 5, and 6 or whatever it is. And that being said, that they can do that. So to your point is, it's not going to make them more money. Now, it will be interesting to see what happens. My guess is, and I have no inside knowledge about this, my guess is that Sony and Disney struck up a deal that, okay, so you've seen them. Okay, so my guess is what they did is they struck a deal, okay? And that you'll probably see 2025, 2026, you will probably see those go over to Disney Plus. Because they will announce that they're going over to Disney Plus, and then they will start, you know, starting their new franchise of Disney. So that's that one. And this is good for everybody. Look, Disney Plus is hurting for content right now. There's nothing else to be said about it because The Mandalorian is not doing the numbers they hoped. And, you know, it's one of those things where, I mean, look, I don't think, as Scott said, though, I don't think people are going to be pissed off. I think people will just say, okay, that's fine. And if they do, they do. And if they don't, they don't. Or maybe they own them already on Blu-ray. So there's another thought right there. Anyways, guys, what do you think about this? Do you think that this is a good move for Disney Plus? Do you think that, are you going to watch Spider-Man, the Spider-Man movies on Disney Plus? Who is your favorite Spider-Man? And which Spider-Man movies are your favorite? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments, and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so I got one last story, and this is kind of a rant, so bear with me. So a couple years ago, okay, we had this absolute travesty happen. Tragedy and travesty, but tragedy more than anything else happened on this film set of what was called Rust. Now, anybody's not familiar with it, this starred Alec Baldwin. And it was a Western. And what ended up happening was the cinematographer ended up getting shot and killed in an accidental shooting. And through all of this, okay, there have been many attempts to A, try to get the charges lessened, okay, or B, get the charges dropped. And the thing is, that now, today, as it stands, okay, it looks like Alec Baldwin is very much or very close to being off the hook, okay? And that just infuriates me. Okay, this is a small little picture of one of the things, okay? So I'm going to read a couple stories, and the first one, it talks about how the manslaughter charge was dropped. Okay. Prosecutors are expected to drop manslaughter charges against Alec Baldwin in the death of Rust cinematographer Howie Hutchinson. And by the way, Hutchinson, I want to keep her picture up throughout this whole thing. Okay. Because, she deserves to have her name. Okay. In a statement, Baldwin's lawyers said they were pleased with the outcome. Quote, "We are pleased with the decision to dismiss this case against Alec Baldwin and encourage a proper investigation into the facts and circumstances of this tragic accident," said the lawyers. Baldwin was charged in January with involuntary manslaughter for the accidental shooting on the set of Rust, which took place in October of 2021. He could have faced up to 18 months if convicted. Prosecutors accused him of negligently firing his Colt 45 during a setup scene at the Bonanza Creek Ranch. Baldwin has maintained that he did not pull the trigger and has no idea that the gun may have contained a live round. The DA has also filed involuntary manslaughter charges against Hannah Goodenancy Reed, the armorer who loaded Baldwin's weapon. The case against her is expected to proceed. A spokesperson for the DA's office declined to comment. The prosecution has been plagued with setbacks, and many observers question whether the DA would be able to show that Baldwin acted with, quote, criminal negligence, end quote. The Santa Fe district attorney, Mary Carmen Altwins, initially charged him with a firearm enhancement, which could have tacked 5 years onto his sentence. That enhancement was dropped, however, after prosecutors discovered it did not apply at the time of the shooting, which I could understand. Special Prosecutor Andrew Reeb was also forced to withdraw the case after Baldwin's lawyers argued that she could not serve as both a DA and state lawmaker at the time. Carmack Altwins recently handed off the case to two appointed special prosecutors, Kerry Morrison, and Jason Lewis. Carmack Altman's recused her office after a judge ruled that she could not continue to work the case if she invoked the special prosecutor statute. Carmack Altman had said that her office was too overwhelmed with other casework and was short-staffed to hand it off to outside assistants. A preliminary hearing was scheduled for May 3rd, at which the special prosecutors were expected to call witnesses to show there was enough evidence to go to trial. Baldwin's attorneys indicated he was not willing to waive statutory deadlines, given the new two prosecutors relatively little time to prepare. Baldwin is currently on the set in Montana, where production on Rust is set to resume after a 17-month pause. I'm going to read that story in a minute. Dave Halls, the first assistant director on Rust, pleaded no contest on March 31st to a misdemeanor charge of negligent handling on a weapon. He was sentenced to 6 months of unsupervisory probation. Okay. So that's the first one. I'm going to read the other one, and then I'm going to chime in for my comments because I have a lot to say on this. So this is from Scott. Rust restarts production 18 months after fatal shooting. Rust will resume production Thursday in Montana, with work beginning 18 months after Alec Baldwin fired a live round, which killed cinematographer Howland Hutchinson while filming in New Mexico. Baldwin will return to the set just 2 weeks before the start of the court hearing in New Mexico to decide whether he will stand trial for a felony charge of involuntary manslaughter over the October 21 incident. Melena Spadata, an attorney for the Rust Movie Productions, affirmed that filming would resume at Montana's Yellowstone Film Ranch. Baldwin settled a lawsuit this past October with the husband, which involves filming restarting with the same actors, and Joel Souza remains in the director's chair. Souza was wounded in the shooting, and under the settlements, Hutchinson would become an executive producer on the film. And I'm going to touch on that part in a minute, too. Bianca Klein, who previously lensed, quote, Marcel with the shoes still on, will take over as the director of cinematography. Along with the criminal-related perils, the incident unleashed civil lawsuits, including one filed in early February by the parents of the late cinematographer, and also another one filed in late February by three Rust crew members claiming PTSD stemming from the on-site incident. Baldwin has pleaded not guilty to the above-noted charges and involuntary, so we know they were dropped. Okay, here's what I got to say. This is fucking horrible. I'm just going to call it what it is. Every single person there needs to be ashamed of themselves. Okay? And I'm not talking about the DAs, and I'm not talking about the prosecutors, and I'm not talking about anything. Okay? They need to be ashamed of themselves. Okay? She lost her life as a result of this. There are so many questions that have to be asked here, and nobody was giving any answers. Okay? Nobody. First and foremost, how did live rounds get on the set? Okay? I have a friend who is a PA. You may have seen him on here a couple times. Okay? His name is Tyler. He works in Atlanta. Okay? He's been on film set for the better part of 7 years of his life. Okay? He works 14 hours a day and gets crap pay. The fact is that, you know, these things, they affect people. Okay? How live rounds got on the set. That's the first thing. This is why we have something called an armorer. Okay? An armorer is supposed to protect somebody that uses guns. So when they say, when they're about to shoot something or film something, okay, they say clear. And then they pass it off to somebody else and they say cold gun. Okay? So when that actor or actress gets that gun, they know that there is no live round in there. So how the live rounds got in there is beyond me. That's first. Second of all, the fact that this settlement, okay, and they said, oh, we're going to make him an EP. That doesn't fucking do anything. He lost his wife. Are you kidding me? Really? And you're going to go about like nothing happened? Yet, Here's what blows my mind. Gutierrez and Reeves is still on the hook here. And he's not. But he's the one who had the gun in his hand. Figure that one out. Look, I have a problem with people not taking responsibility. Okay? I have a serious problem with that. Okay? The director is, it's kind of, I'm gonna equate it like this. Okay? It's like a football team. Okay? Who are the two most important people on the football team? The head coach and the quarterback. Yes, they have offensive coordinators and they have defensive coordinators and line coach. Okay, fine. But at the end of the day, who takes the brunt of it all? The head coach and the quarterback. Okay? The director is the quarterback here. And whether he knew or he didn't know, he should never be getting behind the seat of the, behind the wheel of this again. The fact that they're even considering restarting after 18 months. Let me ask you a question, guys. The fact is, when I say The Crow, the film The Crow, what is the first thing you think of? You think of Brandon Lee, right? You think of his death. That's in that movie to this day, okay? To this day is still one of the most, it's a tragic accident that happened. There's only been one other tragedy, okay, that I can think of off the top of my head that 1994. So it's going to be 30 years next year. 30 years. 30. There was a little film back in the 1980s. I think it was 1981. Okay? It was called The Twilight Zone Movie. Anybody who's a fan of like old-time It was 1983. So there was an accident that happened in 1983 that happened on this. That's turning 30 this year too, or 40. But people forget about this. So that's turning 30. Look, and I'm going to get to your comment in just a second, Metal. I do see you, I promise. The thing is, here's my problem. There needs to be more safety. This was a non-union job, which first and foremost, they cut corners. And that's what happens when you cut corners. Okay? People die. But nobody's taking anybody any responsibility whatsoever. And that's where I have a problem. It's a shame that the type of world we live in, the fact that he's coming back to resume the movie. Yeah. I agree with you. Wholeheartedly. If you're Alec Baldwin, okay, you are going to have to live with this for the rest of your life. Okay? You know that... Here's my thing. Making Matthew an EP as the husband here is going to do nothing. Nothing. That's it. Everybody's just going to go back to doing their job. What if, and I'm just going to throw this out there. What if something happens? What if we're on the set, not we, but what if we hear something that happens on the set later on at another date? And it's either kept under wraps or the only, by the way, let's make something explicitly clear here. The only reason why we even knew about this is because somebody died. That's it. That's the only reason why we knew something happened. Now, they're supposed to have medics and they're supposed to have, you know, EMTs on that. That's the only reason why. Because she died. This film should never see the light of day. And look, I'm all for jobs. I'm all for the film industry having jobs and everything else. But I'm also, this should never see the light of day. okay? It was a completely different era back in 1994, okay? Completely different era, okay? I don't get it. I don't get it. And there needs to, so the one thing that needs to happen is this. There needs to be a hotline, a 24-hour, seven-day-a-week hotline, 365 days a year, okay, that you can pick up the phone, and I'm not talking about calling OSHA, okay, Occupational Safety Association. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about a hotline that you can pick up and call them and either have somebody on the other end or leave it like a five-minute message. Okay, you tell them what chute you're on, you're telling what your position is on the chute, you're telling them what happened. Okay, you leave your contact information, they call you, they confirm. 24 hours later, there's somebody out there, completely not off the radar. Okay, they observe, and what ends up happening is they write a report. Once the report is written, they hand it in. Then, within another 24 to 48 hours later, decisions made, whether they shut it down or not. And if they shut it down, they shut it down for good. There's no probationary period. There's nothing. Okay? They shut it down for good. Because there are people's lives at stake here. And, you know, I mean, look, Letitia Wright got severely, severely injured on Black Panther Wakanda Forever. She's lucky to be alive. Okay? So, you know, and that's a big budget project. Okay? Why is this still even happening? Does the woman losing her life not mean anything? And to be honest, not to be biased, if she were Black, she'd be in jail. Yeah, no, and I agree with you. I mean, I totally understand where you're coming from that. I totally understand where you're coming from that. I don't know what to tell you, Mel. The thing is, at the end of the day, and by the way, no, it doesn't mean a goddamn thing to any one of those people. Because if they did, they would actually take and do something about it. They would never start back. The problem is, I'll answer it like this, and this is going to be a horrible answer, but this is the truth. Hollywood is a business. That's horrible to say. I know. It's a business. And the thing is that they lost a lot of money on this. So they have to try and get back whatever they can. And he's like, it's sad to say, no, I agree with you. I wholeheartedly agree with you. Because at the same time, accidents happen. I understand that. I get that. Look, nobody's perfect. I understand that. And you can say this is an accident or whatever else. But you want to try and prevent accidents as much as possible. Especially with a gun. In today's society, I don't understand it. If she had fallen off a ladder and she slipped, I'm not justifying anything. It would have been one thing. But with our climate of guns today, every time you open up the news, okay, whether it's on your phone or you're watching TV, people are getting shot all over this country. Now, you couple that with movies. Why is it that Tom Cruise and his productions never have a problem? Why is it that any major franchise never has a problem? Because they take the precautions. This was a non-union feature. And you say, well, if it hadn't, look, and by the way, I know, I agree with you about that. I agree with you. Yeah. unfortunately, one thing I would say is this. I hope nobody sees this movie. I hope nobody ever, ever, ever sees this movie. Or I hope it doesn't even get... It's going to get made, we know that. I just hope nobody sees it. I hope it gets buried on Netflix somewhere and nobody watches it. Because every time, okay, you talk about Rust, you're going to be thinking of this every single time. And that's a fact. Because when they talk about The Crow 30 years later, what do they talk about? Brandon Lee. It drives me mad. It really does. The fact that he's not even going to face any... If I'm Baldwin, last thing I'll say on this is this. If I'm Baldwin, I start up a foundation for her. You really want to show you're truly sorry about what happened, you start up a foundation. Something about the arts, something about, you know, and wanting to get in the arts and film and everything else. That's what you do, because that's what she loved. You know, crazy world, yeah. That is. It is a crazy, crazy world. Here's my question. And this is the other last thing I'll say, I promise. Had this person not been Alec Baldwin, would they have gotten those charges dropped? The answer is no. Hands down. No way. Because they're not Alec Baldwin. It's that simple. And the fact that his lawyers, okay, argued, well, she can't be an ADA and a lawmaker. Come on. Now, the other charge I could see because it wasn't on the books at the time. You know, I don't know, Ezra Miller. Yeah, look. Yeah, I know. And that's the thing that drives me nuts about Hollywood. That is the one thing that drives me up. No, there is no accountability. There is no responsibility. Okay. So, you know, we'll see. I you know, the one thing I'll say is this, though. Baldwin's not getting any grade A jobs. He has to work these non-union jobs for crap pay. I mean, if that's any, because his star is not there. So, anyways, that was my rant for the last story. I had to get that out because it drives me nuts. And Hollywood has, I mean, they have so many problems as it is, but they really need to fix the accountability issue here. Anyways, all that being said, so on a more positive note, okay, we have a lot of stuff coming up in the channel. Okay, we have in the next couple days, I'm going to be recording the Mission Impossible, the first episode of Mission Impossible. So what is the logo on the Patreon? It's the same one. It's the same one. As a matter of fact, I will, I'll put the link in here for you. And that way you can, check it out for yourself. So this is the link to the Patreon. So here's the link. And that is going to send you all the way over to Patreon. And that will do that. So, as I said, you guys picked out the movies for actually Mob Mondays and Rewatch Wednesdays. I will be doing The Untouchables, which is Kevin Costner and Robert De Niro. And then that's $5 a month. And then Rewatch Wednesdays, I'm going to be doing Training Day. So the 2001 classic with Ethan Hawke and Denzel Washington and all that. So that will be $10 a month. So there's only two levels. If you want to do a little bit, you know, something a little cheaper, on the on where you are right now, hit that join button. It's $2.99 a month, and it's less than a gallon gas right now. But yeah, so I got the Mission Impossible thing coming up. I've already watched the first movie. I'm going to watch 2 and 3 tonight, I think. And then I'm still trying to figure out the little how I want to do it. I have an idea, though. So I'll probably be recording those this weekend. So the Mission Impossible, for definitely for this weekend. And that will start June 2nd. And then I will be recording this weekend. I will be recording the next two. So it will be The Untouchables and Training Day. So I'll do those, and those will be ready for May. So, okay, guys. I hope everybody has a fantastic day, no matter where they are. Do the three things you need to do. Be safe, be careful, and have a great rest of the day. I'm David Steele, and you have been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye.